Can joy come out of a slum's web of miseries? In the real-time life novel City of Joy by Dominic Lagwell, it does. The story revolves around the interwoven lives of Stephen Kowalski, a Polish Catholic priest, Max Loy, an American doctor, and Hasari Pal, an Indian rickshaw driver, who found themselves being fashioned by the slum life in the Anand Nagar, an urban poor community in the mecca city of Kolkata. They live amid terrible poverty in one of the most crowded places on earth, the sector of Kolkata known as the City of Joy, Anand Nagar. This is the story of living saints and heroes, those who abandoned middle-class lives to dedicate themselves to the poor. And it is a testament to the people of the City of Joy. Their tragedies will move you, but your faith, generosity, and most of all, boundless love will lift you, bless you, and possibly change your life. So, this is a non-fiction work by French author and philosopher Dominic Lagwell. But what panics me is that how do I do justice to a great book in just a few words? Anyway, let's see. An Indian proverb says that if a bag of Kolkata dust is put under the bed of a virtuous man or woman, he or she will become corrupt. But there are some, not a few, but millions, who must be exempt because they have no bed. They sleep on a plank laid on bricks or over a gutter if they are lucky, or on the pavement or any space they can find. These are the refugees from Bangladesh, Bihar, Assam, or the refugees from their own countryside who flock into the city, adding themselves to its already swarming poor. Kolkata was built for exploitation, but for fairly benevolent exploitation, not virulent as it is now. If it was possible to steal the air we breathe, there'd be people in Kolkata prepared to do it. One character, Ramchandra, says he's a wise and generous rickshaw puller, one of the innumerable lesser characters of the City of Joy by Dominic Lagwell in his non-fiction historical genre, which he and Larry Collis did as a succession of the Is Paris Burning, about the liberation of Paris, and Freedom at Midnight, about the partition of India. The City of Joy is about suffering, sorrow, cruelty, and deprivation, about practices so hideous as almost to suspend belief, though they are shockingly true. It is about filth, rags, wounds, disease, even leprosy. Repulsive words, yet even more. The book is about other words that wonderfully live in the whole. Loyalty, kindness, tolerance, generosity, patience, endurance, acceptance, faith, even holiness. And it is about such love that we cannot pass by on the other side. In any case, it is too fascinating to allow us to do that. The City of Joy is a Kolkata slum where more than 70,000 people congregate on ground hardly three times the size of a football field, a place to vermin-infested hovels and shanties without a single flower, a butterfly or a bird. Apart from vultures and crows, it was a place where children did not even know what a bush, a forest or a pond was, where the air is so laden with carbon dioxide and solid food that pollution killed at least one member in every family. A place where men and beasts baked in a furnace for the 8 months of summer until the monsoon transformed their alleyways and shacks into lakes of mud and excrement. Thus goes the description by Dominic Lab. Seemingly outside legislation or the rule of law, the City of Joy or Anand Nagar is ruled by a coalition of gangsters with no curb on extortion and abuse, yet this Indian township has a proverb of its own, quite different from Kolkata's, and is a proud motto, that is, all that is not given is lost, given not taken. Perhaps in the sharing of the family's last chapati, life-giving cup of coconut milk, even a piece worth one-tenth of a cent, will buy something in India, any of us who have made a gift, especially to someone in need, knows what a feeling of warmth and happiness that brings, not to the one who receives as much as to the one who gives. Giving is the secret of the joy in the city of joy. This book is told chiefly through two people, a Bengali peasant, Hazari Pal, and Stephen Kowalski, a young Polish priest with a passionate mission, who becomes Stephen Dada, the big brother, to the inhabitants of the city. In truth, I do not know which story was the most moving. Hazari Pal's story begins in what has become a classic Indian opening. His village is waiting for the vital monsoon. All peasants in India live by the ancient Vedic gods, far older than Hinduism or for that matter Buddhism, Islam, Judaism or Christianity. These gods are the Shining Ones, Bhudevi, the Earth Goddess, Surya, the Sun God, Agni, the God of Fire, and for the nations of this book in particular, Indira, the Goddess of Rain and Storm, can bring a rainbow, a sign to these simple people of a good harvest. But in 1981, there was no rainbow, no rain, nor the slightest trace of cloud. The sky remained steely white. The luminous emerald green soon changed first to grey green, and then to a yellowish colour. The rice grew, then wilted, and finally died. For Bengali peasants, the line between poverty and destitution is so tightly drawn that at least the least drain is snaps. The Pals were already in debt to the money lender, so they had to eat the rice they had stored for seed. Soon, Hazari's village was wiped out after a drought, and thus he was forced to migrate with his family to the city. It was survival of unimaginable proportions. Though Hazari Pal was lucky, his luck seems to the reader more like torture. For months, his home was cramped space on a pavement by a gutter. His first earnings were made when a coolie pulling a rickshaw fell under his load and Hazari took his place. Discovering that pirate blood banks paid money for blood, he tried to give us very weak, and nobody stopped him until a stranger took pity, telling Hazari, "If you don't watch out, your family will soon be seeing your ashes floating on the Hooghly River." Eventually, Hazari succeeded in becoming a human horse, a rickshaw puller like his friend Ramchandra. Thus, Dominic Lappe describes the private world of rickshawwalas with wonderful skill. But as Hazari's story goes, eventually he succumbs to tuberculosis. The redemptive element, before Hazari's death, he saw to it that his daughter was married in their contest. That the Indian contest, the girl's family had to pay dowry, and he succeeded. Meanwhile, Stephen Kowalski had chosen to live in the city of Chol, its only white man sharing its life even to the extent of nearly dying of the chief epidemic, cholera. It was his poor neighbors who rescued him, and even then he refused to go to any but the purest Indian hospital. How deep was his affinity with the city is shown when, in the bewilderment of his first morning there, trying to make his usual morning ritual, he could not remember the prayers and psalms but found himself reciting Om, which in Indian religions is the most powerful and spiritual of all sounds. Thus, he too becomes or he reborns as a new man, leaving his most luxurious world and follows the path of Mother Teresa. For all its vivid realism, this is a profoundly religious book. It expresses the best of all religions, one in which barriers and classifications are lost because it is beneath or above the people. It is one of the most amazing books I had ever come across. The pathos of chaos couldn't have been better described. The book does not celebrate poverty, but the author paints an incredible picture of the denizens of this city of Chol. The poorer they were, the more eager they were to give. Because to describe, the miracle of these concentration camps were the accumulation of disastrous elements were counterbalanced by other factors that allow the inhabitants not merely to remain fully human, but even to transcend their condition and become models of humanity. He takes a dig at the bureaucracy while narrating his brush with the custom authorities, calling the customs office as a classic shrine to bureaucracy. What the city of Calcutta offers to the famished immigrant is faint hope of finding some crumbs to allow them to survive until the next day. The book has an interesting end. The poor is finding hope in the perceived empowerment in the nuclear test iron. A must read for those that want to connect with the harsh ground realities that get outlined through some touching and powerful stories. Last, one of my friends took this book from me to read, and when she gave it back to me, I asked her whether she enjoyed it. And you know what? She suddenly replied, "That is not the kind of book you enjoy. It's a kind of a book that changes your life." And that is what I also realized.